your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Take another look at me. Let it go beyond skin deep. Take another look and see I'm beautiful. I'm beautiful. I am so beautiful.
Good afternoon and welcome to Savor Yourself Beyond Skin Deep with your host, Doris Smeltzer. What does it mean to truly love the skin you're in? Keep listening and find out. Now, here's your host, Doris Smeltzer.
Welcome. Again, we need to open with a bit of housekeeping from last week's show. I did not have time for Dr. Barbara Bersinger to tell you how she savors herself. So she wrote me the following email. Barbara says, I savor myself with time for my spiritual practice, music, and being with my spiritual community. I am filled up by being with my children and family, dates with my husband or girlfriends, playing with animals, my dog Charlie, and being around horses whenever I can, and walks through the wetlands or hikes at the beach or just hanging in a hammock. Aromatherapy, soaking in the tub, and massage is a treat too. And not to leave out, eating delicious foods in great company. If interested in more information on all that Barbara shared last week, please visit her website at barbarabersinger.com. The words I'll share with you today from Andrea were written when she was 19 after a visit to the Sequoia National Forest. In the first few stanzas of this poem, she speaks of the strength and might of the great sequoias. In the final few stanzas, which are the ones I'll share with you, she compares her strength to theirs. She writes, "My roots are small but wiry, thin but deep, spreading out in a weave through the earth, deep tendrils into the molten core. I stand with my cheek pressed against the cold bark, listening, and I hear, and I know that I am as strong as this tree, even more resilient than this giant. Great Sequoia, largest living thing, and me." As you can imagine, throughout my years since Andrea's death and in working in the eating disorder field, I have been immersed in the female experience. To help us focus on the male experience, today's distinguished guest is Lee Cohn, the publisher of GERS Books, a company which has specialized in eating disorders education and publication since 1980, when he and his wife, Lindsay Hall, wrote the first book on bulimia. Lee has co-authored many books on eating disorders and is the editor-in-chief of Eating Disorders, the Journal of Treatment and Prevention. For over 25 years, he's spoken at many colleges and universities, hospitals, community groups, and professional conferences. Last year, he received an honorary certified eating disorder specialist designation from the International Association of Eating Disorder Professionals, and he and Lindsay were given an award for service 3 years ago by the Eating Disorders Coalition in Washington, D.C. Welcome, Lee.
Hi, Doris.
Hi. It is so good to have you on this show.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
For years, bulimia and anorexia have been seen as a woman's issue. When did they become men's issues as well?
I think that the transition happened over a number of years, especially if we look back now 10 to 15 years ago, even a little more than that, things began to change in our culture. Men began to appear in diet ads, for example. If you, we used to fly back and forth to eating disorders conferences all the time and look at the in-flight magazines, and there was a magazine that always had an ad for this one particular diet, and they always showed a beautiful young woman in a bikini and saying, you know, you can look like me and just follow this diet. And about 15 years ago, men started to appear in that exact same ad. So it was the same ad, except for instead of just showing the woman, they also showed a hunky man in it. And that kind of was being mirrored throughout the whole culture. We were seeing more men depicted in states of undress, being sexually objectified, going on diets. The whole milieu began to change.
It's interesting. I think the diet industry realized that they had neglected an entire gender.
I know. What a coup. I always think of it as a bunch of guys sitting around a boardroom somewhere in New York saying, boy, you know, we've already got 90% of all women buying our diet products and feeling bad about the way they look. How are we going to sell more products? And someone probably said, hey, can't we make the men feel bad about themselves too?
I think you're right. I think that may have been precisely what happened.
Whoever, you got a big bonus that year.
Oh, you betcha. So what are the differences between men and women when it comes to food and weight?
There are fewer differences than you would expect. One of the biggest differences is that women are aware of how they feel about their body, how they feel about their eating. Women are aware that they want to lose weight, even though it may be an irrational belief. Men, for the most part, buy into all of those same kinds of thoughts, but they don't really think about it as much. It just kind of comes over them. A man who binge eats consistently over a long period of time may think that that's just male behavior, that, oh, well, I'm a guy and guys eat a lot of food. A man who over-exercises, maybe doing it for some weight loss component in there, but he thinks that more is better and may not really be aware of the health risks from overtraining and overexercising. So I think that there are more similarities than differences, really. I think at the core of dieting are not the health issues that we're led to believe that they are. I think that self-esteem and poor body image are at the root of all of this. And men have the same kinds of issues with low self-esteem and poor body image that women have, in a large part because of the way they're depicted in the media.
That it's absolutely apparent that that's happening out there now. You said that about 15 years ago, you started seeing the males included in that same ad you saw addressing females. Is this the first time in history that men have been so concerned about their appearance?
Well, I think that men have often been concerned about their appearance. It's the first time in history that they've valued thinness in the way that they do now. Historically, if we look at, you know, American culture, for example, if you think back to William Howard Taft, President of the United States, he was a very large man, and he was beloved by the populace, and there were stories and anecdotes about bringing the huge bathtub into the White House that he would be able to fit into, and it was done kind of in an admiring way. It wasn't done in a sarcastic way. It wasn't, for example, when Bill Clinton was president, by contrast, we were always hearing about him being on diets or how much does he weigh or is he exercising enough, you know, aside from his sexual escapades. People were really concerned about, well, you know, how portly is Bill Clinton? And if you look at Bill Clinton compared to William Howard Taft, I mean, there's no comparison. You know, Clinton was a normal-shaped guy by comparison. So By the same token, you look at it in sports. Babe Ruth, the great home run hitter, you know, who lived off of hot dogs and beer, and you know, compare him to Barry Bonds and the steroid scandal. You know, Barry, of course, is just solid, and Babe Ruth was a big, round, beloved guy. If Barry Bonds looked like Babe Ruth, he would be ridiculed now.
Such a change in the cultural expectation.
There really is. There's also been a big change in the way men are objectified in the media. As we know, women are sexualized in the media, have always been sexualized in the media. Women are always shown in various states of undress to appear sexy. Their bodies are almost uniformly underweight and enhanced by cosmetic surgery. And, of course, there's some areas of a woman's body that can't be shown. Specifically, you know, her breasts can't be shown on naked on television, for example, unless you have cable. Men, you can show a man's nipple, and as a matter of fact, if you look at love scenes in television shows over the last 10 years, there have been no studies on this, but just informally, if you kind of watch what's going on here, you'll notice that invariably the man is on his back, the woman has her face resting on his chest, and there's a big nipple right there on the screen because it can be shown, and it's the man's. So as the censors were saying no to certain things about women, they weren't saying the same no's about men. Therefore, you know, there are clips that you can see of men being emaciated-looking but muscular in skivvies and in speedos and oiling their bodies for a competition. You wouldn't see that with women because women have already gone through some empowerment, saying we don't want to be just sexualized in the media anymore. Men haven't taken that step. So men, subsequently, if you look at magazines, women's magazines specifically, you'll see more undressed men in a women's magazine than you'll see women undressed in that magazine.
Interesting. And do you think because it seems to me that I still see so much objectification of females, and sexualizing especially young women. And do you see nearly as much with men?
Well, I'm used to looking at it ever since Arnold Anderson, Tom Holbrook, and I wrote the book Making Weight, or began writing the book Making Weight. I've been very acutely aware of how men are depicted in the media, how men feel about themselves casually. I play in a daily pickup. I play basketball a few times a week in a pickup game, and we have some old guys my age playing, and then we have some young guys, and invariably you have someone showing up saying, "Yeah, I gotta lose some pounds." And you look at the guy, and he looks just like a regular, normal guy. He's not obese by any standards, but he thinks he has to lose weight. All of that comes about not because of better health understanding, because that's not the case at all. It comes about because of the way men are depicted in the media and how men, you know, are led to think about themselves. So men, there's an interesting statistic, and that is that 80% of women would like to lose weight. And the counter to that is that 80% of men would also like to change their weight. Half of them would like to lose weight. The other half would like to actually gain weight, but only in muscle. They want to put on muscle. So this whole six-pack abs look that's so popular now that we see all over in the media of men with their shirts off, thin waist, muscular rippling abs, that is as unattainable for men, for your average man, as is a Barbie figure for a woman.
Mm-hmm.
These are not images that these are not real people.
No. No, not by any stretch of the imagination.
and there's a cosmetic enhancement. There's photographic enhancement in the magazines. In the same way that the pictures of the women have been doctored for years through airbrushing and then photo retouching and, of course, now Photoshop and Illustrator, the same things are happening with men. So that men don't have pores in the same way that women don't have pores. Men don't have blemishes in the same way women don't have blemishes.
We're all so perfect.
Right, we're all perfect. Men have more ripples and more shadows in their gut than are possible.
Oh, God. My gosh. We're going to go to break. And I'd like everyone to please stay tuned for more from Lee Cohn.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Savor yourself. Get more information on eating disorders and body image issues at andreasvoice.org. To purchase Doris's critically acclaimed book, Andrea's Voice, Silenced by Bulimia, go to andreasvoice.org. The GERS Books website at bulimia.com or any bookstore.
On Soul Mind Body Medicine, Dr. Zi Gong Sha teaches a breakthrough soul healing system that empowers people to heal themselves and to heal others. Each week, learn new soul healing wisdom, knowledge, and practice that will transform your life. Dr. Sha offers listeners his personal remote soul healing during each show, Soul Mind Body Medicine with Dr. Zi Gong Sha, broadcast every Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
With thousands of homes destroyed or damaged by fire, lots of people are wondering what to do next. If you are a wildfire survivor, SoCalHelp.org can help you find support and decide what to do, right now, wherever you are. This easy-to-use website is a place you can go to get immediate help with food, shelter, and important medications, and start getting your life back on track. Get help now with insurance, legal issues, and find professional services like doctors and counselors. You can access contact information for national agencies, hotlines, and services that have the resources you need. You can also connect with other survivors and people who can help. For the answers and support you need to rebuild, visit SoCalHelp.org.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Take another look and see I'm beautiful. Beautiful is me.
Welcome back to Savor Yourself Beyond Skin Deep with host Doris Smeltzer. If you have a question or comment for Doris, write to her at doris@savoryourself.org. Now back to today's show.
We are talking with Lee Cohn, publisher of GERS Books and co-author of numerous titles, including Bulimia, A Guide to Recovery, Making Weight, as well as self-harm and eating disorders. So, Lee, which eating disorders are most common in men?
Well, it's the same as with women. It's not that, first of all, a very small percentage of our population have eating disorders. With women, maybe somewhere around 4 to 5% have anorexia or bulimia. With men, historically, it's been thought that about 10% of those cases were male. But that has been, that's kind of old news. That was back from maybe 30, 40 years ago. The reality now is that close to 25 to 30% of all eating disorders cases are males. So how many? I don't know. And what's more relevant than that even is that you have all kinds of, you have anorexia. When you're talking about eating disorders, you mainly talk about anorexia nervosa and bulimia. You also have binge eating disorder,
mm-hmm.
Which is an eating disorder, and as many men get that as do women. And then you have this whole gray area of people that have disordered eating, but they don't qualify for full eating disorders diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
With an anorexic, Maybe they have the weight loss, and they have the woman, and she's amenorrheic. She's not getting her menstrual periods. But maybe she doesn't have the same degree of fear of fat as would be required for a classic diagnosis of anorexia. Mm-hmm. Maybe she's just a chronic dieter and an overexerciser. So we wouldn't call her necessarily an anorexic, or if in a male's case, you know, we wouldn't necessarily call him an anorexic, but the person does indeed suffer from disordered eating and, you know, has problems in their life related to body image and how they view themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say that, you know, as many as 50, 60, 70 percent of people diet and go on diets, most of those people don't have eating disorders. We wouldn't say they have eating disorders, but in fact they have a lot of the same kinds of emotional issues that people with eating disorders have.
Mm-hmm.
So you're really talking about many millions of people when you include all of them. If you consider that diet products sell in the billions of dollars per year. Weight Watchers alone does over $1 billion in revenue. You're talking about enormous numbers of people that are buying into the concept of needing to be thinner. Now, I'm not talking necessarily about people that suffer from morbid obesity and need to lose weight for that reason. But a lot of this overweight epidemic you hear about is really hype, and it's hyped to the point that it's the diet industry that is doing the hyping in order to sell more product. So instead of going to your local health food market and buying some vegetables and having a good healthy salad, you'll buy the prepackaged food that costs twice as much and has much lower nutritional value and probably the same number of calories. But the idea is that it's diet food.
Right.
I don't know if that completely answered your question because I went a little bit off on there, but the point is that in our culture today, as many men are being affected by the influences of the diet industry, the fashion industry, the media, as our women. Men and women are both equally being affected, although most men aren't aware of it, and most people don't acknowledge this.
That is, it's just so interesting that men aren't aware of it. And what do you think would need to have to change for men to be, I mean, just an educational, mass educational effort?
Gosh, Doris, I hate to answer this to you because one of the things that made the biggest impact culturally in terms of public awareness about eating disorders over the last 30 years was the death of Karen Carpenter.
And, yes.
Mm-hmm. You certainly know what it's like to lose a loved one to an eating disorder. And, at the point at which you have a well-known celebrity male dying from an eating disorder is the point at which this will become big news to everybody.
Isn't that heartbreaking?
It's a horrible thing to say, and I feel terrible saying it to you because it's something a mother who's lost a daughter just to bulimia does not want to hear.
But I think, sadly, it truly is the reality.
As it is now, you have men in the media who have appeared to have eating disorders. Billy Bob Thornton, for example.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
He had anorexia. Even Matt Damon talks about how he had extreme weight loss for one of his roles. He lost what would be considered an anorexic amount of weight loss for a part. And you see men talking about their weight gain and their weight loss, and you see men, celebrities, talking about going on diets, and you look at them and you go, how could this guy need to be going on a diet? A few years back, Tom Cruise did a spread in Vanity Fair, which were all kind of hunk shots around one of the Mission Impossible movies. And he went on to Jay Leno's show, and Leno held up the Vanity Fair, and he says, what do you think of these pictures? And Tom Cruise was absolutely embarrassed by them. And even though he was the epitome of male excellence, he was, this is his imitation. It was, well, I didn't know they were going to do those pictures or something like that. He just was inarticulate because men are self-conscious about the way they look.
Wow. It's just, you know, it's something that is so, it seems so entrenched in the female experience that to hear that it's just, it's spreading as quickly now in the male experience.
Well, you know, 30 years ago, when the phrase fat is a feminist issue was coined, it became a cause célèbre for the feminist movement. And feminists rallied in a very positive and very good way to say, we are not going to be oppressed by this imagery of us any longer. We are not going to be oppressed by the media who wants to subjugate us to sexualized images and objectification. Well, that was all well and good, and that really helped many, many women in their recovery processes from food-related and weight-related thinking and disorders, but that hasn't happened for the men yet. And instead, what's happened for the men is, oh, men don't get eating disorders. Those are women's disorders. Men don't have problems with their body image. Women have those kinds of problems. Men don't have those kind of problems, but in fact, men do too. It's not a feminist issue, not anymore.
So what can men learn from the women's movement about self-esteem?
Well, you know, I would hope that some men are willing to look at the feminist movement. I myself am a feminist. A lot of men are too macho to look at anything except, you know, sports on TV. Not that I don't watch my fair share. But, you know, men need to look within themselves is the place they need to look. It's not that they need to look outwardly to find good role models about this stuff, because there really aren't that many. years ago, you know, you had people like Lindsay Hall, my wife, saying, you know, you can be a complete person, you can have total self-love and not obsess about food and weight and all of those other issues that go along with recovery from an eating disorder. She was a role model, and there were many, many, many others of women, but there really have not been very many role models. I like to call myself the role model for male body image, because when I go out and give talks, I'm always talking about how my body looks just like my dad's body looked like, and I show pictures and talk about how my son, one of my two sons, not both, have the same genetics that I have. Well, genetics play a very important part in body image, in what your body is going to look like. And the more you understand that this is my body, this is genetically what my body is meant to be, then you begin to stop focusing on it so much, and you start thinking about other areas of your life and enhancing those. You know, the guy that's out there and thinks that he needs to lose weight because his life is going to be better as a result, and he's not eating well, he's cutting out every bit of fat that is in any kind. I know someone that won't eat anything that has fat in it. And, you know, he's as radical as any of the women that I've known that have had eating disorders over all of these years. And interestingly enough, in his family, he has a history of food-related disorders.
Wow.
So, you know, he needs to understand the genetics of that and then admit that he has a problem. Men don't like admitting that they have problems.
Oh.
You know, it's a hard sell. You know, this is someone that I've known actually his entire life, and he's actually mad at me. He doesn't even want to talk to me anymore because I call him on it when I see him, and he rips his shirt open and says, look at these abs. Have you ever seen abs like that on a guy my age?
Ouch! Oh, my gosh, Lee, that is amazing.
Or you know, when his kids get on the ground and start doing crunches and sit-ups to show me how strong their stomachs are.
Oh, okay, hold that thought.
Or his five-year-old son lifts up his shirt and says, look at my abs.
Oh, ouch. Okay, we're going to run to break. Keep listening for more from Lee Cohn.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Savor yourself. Get more information on eating disorders and body image issues at andreasvoice.org. To purchase Doris's critically acclaimed book, Andrea's Voice, Silenced by Bulimia, go to andreasvoice.org, the GERS Books website at bulimia.com, or any bookstore.
Painful feet can affect our ability to enjoy the most basic activities in our daily lives, like walking your dog or cleaning your house, not to mention any physical activities you engage in. Thankfully, Dr. Larry Skor brings to Voice America Health and Wellness Channel timely advice and resources to get you back on your feet and feeling great. Don't miss There's No Business Like Toe Business every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Take another look and see I'm beautiful. Beautiful is me.
Welcome back to Savor Yourself Beyond Skin Deep with host Doris Smeltzer. If you have a question or comment for Doris, write to her at doris@savoryourself.org. Now back to today's show.
Welcome back. We're chatting with Lee Cohn, an authority on publishing, who's been a featured speaker at conferences in both the publishing and eating disordered worlds. And prior to break, Lee, you were sharing with us a friend of yours who has sons, and that how they all sort of talk about their bodies and look at these abs and all of that kind of stuff, and that they're I was sharing with you during break how completely amazed I am that this friend knows what you do for a living and continues to make those sorts of comments.
Well, it's very much like alcoholism would be. If somebody has a problem like an eating disorder or body dysmorphic disorder or alcoholism or drug abuse, they don't want to hear that they have a problem. They don't want to think that there's something wrong with them. They want to think that everything's just fine. In my friend's case, over the last 10 years, he's been in and out of two marriages. He's had children. He's been a workaholic. He himself is the child of abuse and had a parent who was drug addicted for a while, a parent who was sexually promiscuous. There was chaos in the home when he was a child. And he has, for some reason, taken on body image and fat phobia as his focus in life right now. He focuses on his body, on how little he weighs, on what his fat content is. He focuses on these things instead of looking at the true problems in his life.
Oh,
he can't sustain a relationship, that he had poor parenting, that he has unhappiness in love situations.
Oh, sure.
So it's easier for him, instead of going, I need to be in therapy and understand how my parents influenced my emotions because of their chaotic relationship and the chaotic household in which I was raised, instead of looking at that painful past, which just really disturbs me to even think about, I'm going to think about my weight.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much easier.
I think it's such a common thing for both men and women. You find that that's one area where you can really appear to have complete control. And I think it's a deceptive control because, you know, when we war with our bodies, our biology will always ultimately win. But it's this thought that I've got this mastered, and as you say, it's the perfect self-deception of being able to not have to deal or look at any of those other things that are just, I mean, it sounds like his life has been filled with tremendous amounts of pain.
Tremendous. And he's never done anything about it. He's never been in therapy.
Oh.
He saw a therapist briefly when he was going through one of his divorces, but that was all about child custody.
Oh.
But he himself has never been in therapy. He's never bought a self-help book. You know, he doesn't think there's anything wrong with him.
Sure.
Why try to fix a problem when there's no problem there?
Right, yeah.
When in reality, you know, his body is emaciated.
Uh-oh.
And his soul is really empty right now. It's
sure.
Sad.
Well, it sounds like his all of his life experiences, his childhood, his relationships, they've just been a setup for the development of some sort of compulsive behavior.
That's right. And that's the case with men and women equally.
Uh-huh.
Women don't develop eating disorders, and men don't develop eating disorders just because they saw some thin model on television or in
right.
a magazine. There are other components that go into it, genetics being one. You know, that's we're finding as more and more study is being done how important the genetic influence is on mm-hmm. as a risk factor. The media is a factor also.
Mm-hmm.
The family and the family upbringing is a factor. Whether or not the person has undergone any kind of trauma. Actually, with men, men alcoholics have a very, well, I won't say very high because it's not very high, but they have a relatively high prevalence of bulimia as well. So
mm-hmm.
you have a lot of male alcoholics that also have bulimia, which is
wow.
actually more common in the men than in the women. But the point being is that these are multidisciplinary problems.
Mm-hmm.
They're multi-causal in effect. Someone becomes eating disordered not just because of one reason. It's not
sure.
just because someone said, oh, you look fat today and need to lose weight, or I wouldn't go out with a girl that had a body like yours, or you know, someone teasing a boy in gym class and him thinking that all of his problems are because he has too big of a gut.
Right.
It's not just because of that. It's also because of all these other components also, and that person has something inside of him or her that is a triggering device to get an eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
you can have two people, you can have two sisters that are in the same home, they have the same parents, they go to the same schools, and one of them develops, they have, you know, essentially the same genetics, or similar genetics, and one of them develops an eating disorder and the other one does not. Well,
right.
Why is that?
Right.
Because we don't watch our children every minute of every day, and there are so many different components that go into the making of that eating disorder.
Exactly. So we mentioned compulsive behaviors. I know that with men, compulsive exercising
yeah.
is tremendous, and so often, you know, the reason given, I'm just keeping in good shape. So what's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with being in good shape and exercising. Exercising is very important. Everyone should exercise
mm-hmm.
To some degree. Too much exercise is not a good thing. In the same way, you know, everybody should have dessert, you know, once a day because it nourishes their soul and
mm-hmm.
People, you know, enjoy the moment of eating that bit of dessert. That's not to say that they should keep eating dessert all night long.
Mm-hmm.
By the same token, too much exercise can be a bad thing. It can be a bad thing for men or for women. Mm-hmm. I just finished editing a book that we published called The Exercise Balance by Pauline Powers and Ron Thompson.
Uh-huh.
It's really, really good. And in that, they go very deeply and look at over-exercise and what are the symptoms, what are the characteristics of it, and what are the hazards of exercising too much. With women, there's something called the female athlete triad. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not, but it essentially means that the woman over-exercises, she has amenorrhea and disordered eating, and that there's also some osteoporosis or osteopenia, some bone loss. Men also, obviously, they don't lose their periods, but they actually, from over-exercising and from under-eating, they develop lowered testosterone, we've found, or researchers have found. Arnold Anderson, I'm always using the we because Arnold is one of my co-authors on weight, and he's actually the one that found that.
So,
but anyway, men do have lowered testosterone. They have bone loss, and they have disordered eating. Over-exercise can lead to very serious health risks. Do we have time right now for a story?
You know, actually, we are about to go to a break, so I want you to hold on to that, and when we come back, that's where we're going to pick up.
Okay, when we come back, I'm going to tell you about a young man with an eating and exercise problem.
Okay, thank you.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Savor yourself. Get more information on eating disorders and body image issues at andreasvoice.org. To purchase Doris's critically acclaimed book, Andrea's Voice, Silenced by Bulimia, go to andreasvoice.org, the GERS Books website at bulimia.com, or any bookstore.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice,
what if something happens? Will you come get me?
Should I stay where I am and wait for you? Or go to Grandma's house since it's closer?
Shouldn't we pick a place to meet?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of a terrorist attack.
Mom, if you're not home, should we go to the neighbor's house?
How do we keep in touch with each other if the phones don't work?
Should I be worried how we all get home?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Tune in on Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Healing the Grieving Heart, the program that takes you on a journey through grief after the death of a child. Join Dr. Gloria Horsley, marriage and family therapist and bereaved parent, while she interviews and discusses with other bereaved parents and siblings how they have coped with the death of a child and gone on to create and realize new dreams. So tune in Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Healing the Grieving Heart with Dr. Gloria Horsley, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness. The incidence of autism has increased at an alarming rate. Autism One, A Conversation of Hope, hosted by Betsy Hicks, illuminates how right now there is more reason than ever for individuals with autism spectrum disorders and their families to have the best hope for the brightest future. Autism is treatable, and given appropriate therapies, children are recovering. With well-known researchers and doctors, members of Congress, and expert service providers from a wide range of disciplines, Betsy offers interviews and insights highlighting the progress in areas related to autism spectrum disorders, such as biomedical research and treatment, communication, education, and behavioral modalities. adult services, sociological and philosophical issues, and legislative advocacy and insurance concerns. Autism One, a conversation of hope, broadcast each Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Autism One, a conversation of hope. Through education and conversation, there is hope.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Take another look and see I'm beautiful. Beautiful is me.
Welcome back to Savor Yourself Beyond Skin Deep with host Doris Smeltzer. If you have a question or comment for Doris, write to her at doris@savoryourself.org. Now back to today's show.
We are back with Lee Cohn, the publisher of GERS Books, which can be found on the web at bulimia.com. And before the break, Lee, you were going to talk to us, you said, when we came back, about a man who has both an eating disorder and an exercise problem.
Well, you know, it's really not fair for me to call him a man exactly because he's one of my godchildren.
Oh.
In this particular case, Lindsay and I were at a holiday function and saw this young man, and I'm just going to, we'll call him Bill.
Okay.
And Bill had a, has always been a thin young man. He's about 21 now, 20, 21, right in there. And he, when he was in high school, he and I had a conversation about his weight, and he was restricting his eating at that time. And I said, look, you really have to watch for this. It could become a lifelong problem. And I went through the whole thing, and he rallied, and he resumed his eating at that time, cut back on his exercise a little bit. Fast forward ahead a few years, and he's off in college, and he's been in college for a couple few years, and Lindsay and I saw him at this holiday function and noticed that Bill had lost a lot of weight, I mean, really a lot of weight. We know that he's gay, and we know that, and there's no secret about that, and that there is a higher incidence of eating disorders in the gay population for a number of reasons. Specifically appearance-related and for sexuality purposes. Gay men think that being thin is of value. Interesting, in the lesbian community, it's not that way at all. But anyway, getting back to Bill.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. So we talked to him at this function, and then a couple weeks later we got together with his parents because Bill had gone back to school and said, you know, Bill's looking really thin. We're concerned that he has an eating disorder. And we know because of certain aspects of his lifestyle, not just being gay, but also his outlook about fat and some of the things he says and some of the ways he behaves, his perfectionism, how he strives to be perfect in everything he does, and the amount of exercise that he's doing, that we have a problem here and that you need to do something about this with him and intervene. Well, the parents were very resistant to the whole thing. They thought, he's just always been a thin kid. You know, sometimes he skips breakfast and, you know, it's not a big deal. He does like running. He enjoys running. He runs 5 or 6 miles a day. And, you know, that's not such a big deal. He's just in good shape. So we got out some assessments, eating disorders assessments, and we said, okay, let's, you pretend to be Bill and answer these questions. And we went through the list, and he, by proxy, scored very high in eating disordered behavior.
Wow.
And we convinced the parents that, indeed, they needed to have him assessed by a professional, and they agreed that they would. Well, they took him for an assessment to a very well-known eating disorder center that we referred referred them to and close to where his school was, and they hospitalized him that day because he had extreme cardiac problems.
Wow.
He had an extremely what's called prolonged QT interval, which has to do with the heartbeat and an irregularity in the heartbeat, which is caused by malnutrition and overexercise.
Oh, my gosh.
And so even through all of this, the parents say, well, they never said he had anorexia. They just said, you know, he wasn't eating enough and exercising too much. So, you know, I said, fine, yeah, I don't care what you call it. Just, you know, help him, you know, have him get some help.
Uh-huh.
And he has, and he's responded very, very well. He's gained back a lot of weight, and still in the early stages.
Sure.
And we're hopeful about a complete recovery, but it's going to take a lot of work, and he's going to have to go to therapy, and he's going to have to understand, do media literacy and understand the influences of the media on him. And he's going to have to go to a nutritionist and understand how to eat well when he's away at school and on his own. And it's going to be a long course. And unfortunately, he's really upset with me and Lindsay because we blew the whistle on him.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
Shoot the messenger.
Well, indeed. It always amazes me the depth of denial that we as parents can be in.
Yeah,
I mean, it's pretty amazing, but what a brilliant idea to give the parents the assessment.
Well, what was neat was the father actually more than the mother has issues. The mother doesn't really have issues with food or weight. She doesn't obsess about it in any way, shape, or form. The father actually does to some degree, not nearly as much as Bill, but we had them together do the assessment, and it was just out of a book called The Parent's Guide to Eating Disorders by Marcia Heron, which we have also published, and it's really just a wonderful book, The Parent's Guide to Eating Disorders. But in there was a couple of assessments, and we did one of the assessments for Bill by proxy, like I said, and then we said, okay, to the mother, now we want you to do this test just as if it was you, and answer things honestly. And she scored perfectly all right. So when she looked at the difference in the scores between what her score was and what his score would be, she went, yeah, boy, there really is a problem here, isn't there?
Wow.
And they would argue, the parents, not argue, they would bicker over the answers. Is that a 3 or is that a 4?
Oh.
No, it's really, it's not a 4. He's not that bad.
Oh, dear.
No, I think he is just a 3. No, he really is that bad at
the
4.
Oh, my gosh.
So wow. It was hard to look at situation honestly.
It sure is. You know, we only have a few minutes left, and as you noticed from the beginning of the show, I'm constantly running out of time, and I don't get to ask, how do you savor yourself? And you are one of the few men I get to ask that question to of. So how do you?
Well, I thought that what Barbara said in her email had a lot of the same answers that I would give to that question, so you can just go by her. But in my own case, I've always, always is the wrong word, but for many, many, many years, I've had a very good self-image. Lindsay and I wrote a book called Self-Esteem Tools for Recovery, and I have a very healthy self-esteem. I like myself. I like being with myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's never a problem. There are certain things that I do that just enrich my soul entirely, things like doing oil painting. Playing guitar and singing, taking soaks in the hot tub, spending time with Lindsay, playing basketball. I play basketball usually 3 times a week. Having relationships that are healthy relationships, and I wish they all were. They're not all healthy relationships.
We're human.
We're human is right. You know, I'm hoping my relationship with Bill is going to improve in the near future. but essentially loving myself and seeing everyone as a reflection of God and recognizing their inner goodness and trying to do good in the world, trying to do service.
And you do. Lee, thank you so much. You've enlightened us on the male experience.
Okay, I'm glad I could help.
Thank you. And thank you, listeners. Let us close with Andrea's opening words. And I know that I am as strong as this tree, even more resilient than this giant, great sequoia, largest living thing, and me. Until next week, may you experience your strength and resiliency as you remember to savor yourself.
Take another look and see I'm beautiful. Beautiful is me.
We appreciate you spending this hour with Doris Smeltzer and Savor Yourself. If you would like to learn more about eating disorder prevention, visit our site at andreasvoice.org. That's andreasvoice.org. And be sure to tune in next week for more valuable tips on how to dare to go beyond skin deep and to truly savor yourself. We'll see you next Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Health and Wellness Channel.